Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to the Whiskey Congress. Today we're drinking Hayburner Pale Ale from Big Ditch Brewing. That's a Buffalo-based brewery, actually started by some friends of mine. So they make a great product. Check them out. They're in Western New York, and they're actually moving themselves over the country. That's Big Ditch Brewing. We're drinking Hayburner. We're also drinking Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey, because Irish whiskey is kind of relevant to some of the stuff we're going to talk about today, Steve.
A little bit. There was a little bit of a thing last night, a little bit of a get-together, a gathering, an event, if you will.
I will. So last night, Conor McGregor fought Floyd Mayweather. I don't know why Floyd Mayweather suddenly has an Irish accent.
Right, stop.
Anyway, we would talk about the fight coming in. We both posted prediction videos. I did watch yours where you called me annoying for bringing up the Great White Hype, but then acknowledged it was essentially the Great White Hype.
It was. Now,
it didn't end up with the first round knockout and the heavily favored black fighter being completely out of shape. So there were some differences. Other than that, pretty much the same thing. We basically both predicted the same thing. We predicted Floyd would win. We both predicted by stoppage. That's how it went down. I thought the stoppage was a bit premature, but only in the sense that it sped up the inevitable. I don't think there was any chance McGregor was... I thought the first six rounds were basically even. I thought McGregor did some decent offensive work early on, and not a lot really happened. I mean, I was out at a bar. You were at home. So we didn't get to watch it together, but I was in a bar, and I was listening to the crowd respond to the action, and I thought they were very heavily over-responding. I mean, McGregor came in with, threw a lot of short punches, and he did put some leather on Floyd.
Well,
but never
hold on.
Hurt
I mean,
him.
Like, think, I mean, you got a crowd that's, you know, been in Vegas for, you know.
I meant the crowd in the bar I was in.
Okay. I was about to say. Well, same difference.
So it's the same difference, yes. You know, I mean, I was in an Irish pub watching Conor McGregor fight.
Right. I mean, there were a lot of people who started, we'll say, pre-game, their own little pre-fight celebration. So, you know, people were excited. And, you know, it's amazing how the narrative for this has kind of flipped, right? The fans for Conor McGregor were, oh, he's going to knock him out. And, you know, Pride of Ireland, blah, 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 yada,
right.
yada. And then now it's, oh, look, he made it to the 10th round. I mean, it's virtually a win. You know, I agree with you on the stoppage being early, but it was, like you said, it was preventing the inevitable. You know, at that point in time, Conor McGregor, he could barely get his hands up. He really couldn't protect himself. He was taking, you know, direct blows to the face.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think he took like three very direct blows to the face. There's plenty of time left in the round. And so, I mean,
The one thing I would say is boxing needs to bring back the needs to implement the standing eight count. A referee should have more options than do nothing and end the fight.
Right.
Right. If the ref can step in there and say, okay, count it as a knockdown, counting to eight, I ask you, how many fingers am I holding up? If the response to that is, I'll have the veal piccata, fight's done.
Right.
But the fact that a referee, once a referee jumps in, he has to stop it. He can't intervene on a fighter's behalf unless there's a standing eight rule in effect. And that used to be fairly commonly used, and it's gone now, and that just annoys me.
Yeah, I don't understand why it went away. It seems like if we're talking about safety, that is the, in terms of safety and quality of the overall event,
right.
what's being presented, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I don't know why it's gone away. I remember many standing eight counts, although I can't remember the fight. A guy got a standing eight count in a Tyson fight early on, and, you know, the ref does a standing eight count, and I can't remember the fight. It was some obscure fighter. And they do the standing eight count, and the ref steps out. Guy, like, obviously looks like a deer in headlights, and, you know, Tyson just barrels down one tap, and it's over. And it's just like, man, maybe...
You should have.
Maybe. I don't know. Even if he said the right number of fingers, maybe you shouldn't have. But anyway.
But right, without the standing eight, there's just the extremes. You either end the fight,
right,
or you let the fight go on when you believe perhaps it shouldn't. That would have been a perfect instance where a standing eight should have been the call by the ref.
Yeah, and you know McGregor is going to use that, and I think fast forwarding to the end of the fight, I thought that McGregor was relatively, gracious and composed after the fight, and wasn't. I mean, he was a little obnoxious with the whole with the whiskey and.
If you didn't see the post fight press conference, he literally he was introduced by Floyd, which I thought was kind of a class move. I mean, these two, as much shit as they talked before the fight, at the end of the conversation, so ultimately they had to end up liking one another because they made each other hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. So how much can you hate a guy who you stood toe to toe with for 10 rounds and now you're $300 and $100 million richer respectively? And I almost said at the end of the day, we'll have to determine how that gets ruled, whether the bat goes around and it's ruled. But that brings us back to the drink of atonement has been chosen.
That was decided. Thanks to everybody who voted on Twitter. Smirnoff Ice won.
And we lost.
Right. So when we, when bad things happen on the show, whether I say at the end of the day or Jim loses a bet to me of some sort or vice versa, then the drink of atonement will be a Smirnoff Ice.
Ugh.
I'll spare you.
That
may change. I don't know. We may go back. And,
appealing to the third base umpire. Fortunately, we don't have any Smirnoff Ice in the house today. I will go out and buy some for the next show. So anyway, the fight ended up being it wasn't a total snooze fest, but it was not.
Well, it was. I think a lot of people want to give Conor McGregor as much credit as they can for being in it as long as
a participation trophy.
That's exactly what I mean. And listen, he did go in. I mean, he fought a decent fight early. He there were a couple style changes that happened during the fight, which I thought, hey, both fighters adjusted well. We saw something different out of Floyd. He was attacking. He was
actually
aggressive. He was moving forward a lot. And I think part of that is, though, Floyd wasn't – I don't think Floyd trained for this nearly as aggressively as he would have for, let's say, a Pacquiao or, Canelo or something like that, Canelo Alvarez. But he was moving forward. He was attacking. And I think, though, a big part of it is just that Floyd is 40 years old. He's not as fast as he was. He's not as strong as he was. He knew it, and he knew in order to win the fight, I think he realized, like, hey, I can't run from this guy the whole time.
And McGregor is a physically much bigger man.
Right.
So if he would have done his normal thing of duck everything, slip everything, and been wrong once, he might have gotten lit up.
He took a couple punches.
Shots.
No, here's the deal. McGregor
never loaded up, though, right?
McGregor really never got a great, powerful shot off. There were a couple people that were asking about the power of the punches in the UFC. Well, they're wearing much thinner gloves, and, it's just a different style. You're exposed in a much different fashion when it comes to UFC and compared to boxing. But, with what McGregor did show, I mean, like, it was obvious that he was a UFC fighter. There were just some things that he kept doing where you could tell he was kind of...
Hands out front.
Right, like he was kind of reverting to some of his MMA style, which I don't necessarily hold against him. But it was clear he wasn't a natural boxer. Really what kept him in it was his size. But ultimately, I think that's what cost him the fight because he was too fatigued. I think I predicted round eight...
I said six.
And I think the fatigue was evident in round eight. Nine, he had a bounce back of energy in nine, and I think that just completely drained his tank. And in ten, he just couldn't get his hands up anymore to defend himself, and he got tagged in the face a few times.
Yeah, I mean, so there's the fight side of it, and then there's the social political, racial side of it. I watched this fight in an Irish pub. I was pleased to say that there was nothing overtly revolting or racist said in my vicinity. That would have felt like a fairly fertile ground for that sort of behavior to take place, and it didn't. A slight uptick in my faith in humanity, maybe. Maybe I'm being too generous, but it was nothing happened last night that made me shake my head and just go, "Golly, I'm ashamed of this place" or whatever.
Well, there were a couple people I watched it with, and they were. I don't want to get into too many specifics, but obviously they were, you know, Conor McGregor fans in this particular instance, and it was more because they're just complete disdain for Floyd Mayweather.
Right.
And I can. My big thing is whether it's athletes or, you know, any type of entertainer, I typically can separate the entertainer from the person. And maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. Floyd's got a pretty bad history with women, physical abuse, violence. And domestic violence. And it's disgusting and it's unacceptable. That being said, I mean, I'm not going to say that Conor McGregor is going to beat him because I don't like it. I mean, you're asking me, what's my prediction? My prediction is that Floyd Mayweather wins because he's a better fighter. If you ask me who I want to win...
Who did you want to win? Because I wanted McGregor to win. I wanted you Floyd to lose.
Yeah, you always want to see Floyd Mayweather lose. I honestly don't care. The tough part for me is I don't necessarily have a horse in the race in a lot of the fight games. Like I look at them, I see who do I think is the better actual fighter, and then either they prove to me that I'm right or they get beat. And so I don't necessarily go with who I want to win or who I don't root for fighters that way. I just look at the data that tells me how good they are, and then I say, all right, well, this is who wins. So it's fairly objective for me. I just don't have that sort of, like, you know what's weird for me? Since Tyson lost to Buster Douglas, like, I have not really fallen in love with another boxer.
I was a college sophomore, I think.
I mean, because that was in, what, 90? 90,
1990 or 91.
Yeah, it was either 90 or 91. I was 10 or 11 years old. Mike Tyson was my favorite person on the planet. And he loses to Buster Douglas, and I was, like, devastated. Like, how could this happen? How could he lose to that guy? And then throughout the course of the years, Buster Douglas goes on to be a piece of shit. You know, I mean, it's just like...
Knocked out in four rounds by Evander Holyfield.
Right, and then, I mean, he's got diabetic
coma.
Whatever, and it's just like, he's like, what the hell? And so ever since then, I've never been able to say I like this guy or I dislike that guy. Mike Tyson ruined it for me. I can't trust any of them. So now I'm just very objective, you know, cold-blooded. Either you're a good fighter or you're a bad fighter. I don't really give a fuck about the rest of it.
That's funny because I'm the exact opposite. We're both big boxing fans, but to me, I'm almost always in someone's camp. And I'll even, here's what's funny about me is I will change camps. If I'm watching a fight between two guys I don't have a vested interest in, I will change sides based on how a guy fights at night, not just whether they're successful or not, but if a guy starts punching after the bell, I'm like, fuck you, I want you to get knocked out. I hate certain types of dirty fighting I actually respect. As weird as that is, all right, I could ramble on for hours. I'm going to save us the...
For me, it's a little bit different, and because the one thing I do see a lot, especially in fighting, and this has been since, I mean, you can go back to Coming to America with Eddie Murphy. There's so much, you know, culture and race based on, you know, I'm rooting for this guy because I want to see the white guy beat the black guy, or I want to see the black guy beat the white guy. I want to see the Irish guy win. I want to see the Italian guy. I want to see Rocky Marciano.
Sure.
Coming, you know, where I'm from, Youngstown, you know, Ray Boom Boom Mancini is everybody's favorite boxer. You know, all the Italians love him, and it's just like anybody who... if you don't like him, then it's like, oh, you got a problem with Italian.
Kelly Pavlik, another young
Kelly
fighter.
Kelly was a little different story because Kelly Pavlik, you know, coming out of Youngstown, he was he's a white guy and he's about as white as they come. But Kelly really embodied the city, and Kelly grew, I mean, like, Kelly got his ass beat by a lot of black, like, that's how Kelly got into boxing. And he boxed with a lot of the black guys in the city, and because boxing is huge in Youngstown. And so that's, he was just a part of all different types of culture in the city. You know, Kelly and I are, you know, relatively you decent friends. Yeah. I mean, we've hung out together. We've drank together, which, I mean,
yes,
I won't, you know, and we've, you know, we've spent the night same houses together multiple times. Kelly has always been a good guy to me. He's funny as shit. And he's got plenty of other black friends and Puerto Rican friends and white friends and everything else. Kelly was just a little bit different. So he didn't, for Youngstown, he didn't divide the city.
Oh, right? Okay.
Boom Boom did? Well, I don't know. I was so young that.
Like, I was young. I was like 14 when I saw Rocky Balboa.
I don't think that Ray Mancini, I couldn't have been, I don't think I saw.
He probably retired before you were 10.
Yeah.
In fact, he probably retired, yeah, definitely before you were 10.
Right.
Probably when you were like 6.
Yeah, I think he retired before, I don't think I actually was old enough to ever see him fight. So I don't know what the impact was, but I just know people talking about Ray Mancini now. Most people are pretty positive about him, but the kind of passion for Ray Mancini. Now, Ray Mancini is a great guy. I've met him as well. He's very philanthropic, and he is all about Youngstown, and he's a great sort of like you know, kind of patriot for the city. But I think in just hearing people talk about him, you know, obviously there's, you know, the Italian pride,
the glory days,
and the glory, right? Like that is very loud and proud. And then, you know, everyone else says, yeah, he was a pretty good fighter. And it's just, there's a little bit of a difference in terms of how he's revered.
So let me do something that you probably never thought you would hear. I am going to speak well of Floyd Mayweather. He's done as a fighter, probably. I've obviously have been very critical of him as the way he's carried himself and some of the stuff he's done. But he handled the post-fight press conference like a guy who was reflecting on a great career and was sort of, you know, taking in his blessing, so to speak. And I don't know. I thought he handled that all pretty well. The fight itself was more of a spectacle than it was an actual fight. I mean, it was literally a spectacle is the only word I can come up with. It was a curiosity more than it was a legitimate.
And one of the people I was with this is one of the worst fights I've ever seen. And this isn't a boxing match. This is a joke. And, you know, she was very, very critical of the whole thing. And again, it was more because She, on the one hand, she was right. Like, this was not your typical boxing match, and it was definitely, like you said, a spectacle. And then again, the bias against Mayweather was evident there, right? I mean, it was evident that he was winning, and so it's just like, well, this is stupid because he's winning, right? Now McGregor knocked him out, then it would have been the greatest event that she had ever seen, and you know, she'd want me to record it and send it to her, whatever. But I still think that for, even though it was an exhibition, it was still a decent fight. I'm glad it happened to a certain degree. I don't think that it necessarily helps either sport. It does.
I agree.
It may drive the money up a little bit for UFC fighters, because Conor McGregor is going to be able to, is going to command more money. He's not going to get that type of money.
Right.
But he may be able to command more money from Dana White. His brand, like, McGregor's brand has grown so much that White may be able to pay him a little bit more in UFC. But Dana White's not going to start paying these guys anywhere near boxing money.
And no one can, because this money was crazy, right?
Oh,
it was like
right.
$300 million for Mayweather.
We don't know the exact. We don't know. Like,
that's not always to them. That's their camp. So.
They signed a confidentiality agreement, so we don't know the numbers. There's been estimates out there that this is about a $500 million fight. The split was, I believe, like 70-30.
Yeah, it was 3-1 in favor of Floyd.
And that, and, you know, if it's a $500 million fight, you know, it ends up being, you know, a few hundred million to Floyd and then, you know, a little
75 around, million. But exactly. Still, for one night's work, not
generational
bad.
Wealth was created last yes. night. And I honestly, more power to him.
Hey.
You know, more power to him. Listen, they
cost me $20 to walk into a bar.
Right. I mean, you know.
And as much as I talked about protesting it and would have felt fine doing that, I'm glad I got to watch it. I mean, you know, we want to talk about this like it's never happened before. Rocky Marciano fought a professional wrestler in his day. Primo Carnera was his name. I've actually seen this fight, and it was bizarro world. Primo Carnera was like 6'6" and 250 pounds. Rocky Marciano was like 6'200". And half the fight, they're on the ground because Primo Carnera had no idea how to box. We just grab them. They'd fall to the ground. They'd get up. I mean, it was hysterical to watch.
Well, and then, you know,
Thunderlips.
Rocky Balboa fought Thunderlips.
Exactly.
So we've definitely
exactly.
seen this before.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, well, but my point is the Thunderlips fight actually did happen. I mean,
Hulk Hogan as Thunderlips.
As Thunderlips. The ultimate male versus the ultimate meatball, which was funny. I mean, kind of Italian slur. But all right, whatever. All right. On to the next topic. The president of the United States was in Arizona giving a speech where he talked about how Sheriff Joe was going to be okay, and he gave the speech in front of a clearly pro-Trump crowd. That crowd, there's a few things to be said about this. One, did you see what the Arizona GOP leadership tweeted out with the picture of the people trying to get into the Trump? I'm sorry to ambush you with this, but I have to. They tweeted out a picture of throngs of people trying to get in to see the president speak. They showed pictures of the Cavaliers parade, the Cavaliers championship parade, and said, "These people are coming in to see the president."
Are you serious?
I am not making this shit up.
Wow.
Someone showed that to me yesterday, and I'm like, this is a joke, right? But no. They showed me the Arizona GOP whatever. And the picture of downtown Cleveland, like, why are all these Trump supporters wearing, you know, golden, right. wine and gold colors?
Wine and gold and that's...
Yes, that happened. And so then Trump gave his speech.
Which is kind of scary because there are plenty of people who retweeted that,
oh,
who
sure.
believe it, who are saying, see, this is your mandate. Like, it's oh my God.
Downtown Cleveland. The right. plumage on the trees is clearly like Northeast Ohio,
and
not
Arizona,
desert, which doesn't have that kind of trees everywhere. I apologize. I meant to bring that up to you before the show, but
wow.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, wow, that's awesome. That is the term propaganda was defined in moments like that.
Right.
So speaking of that, so Trump goes on. He talks about Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who ultimately gets pardoned, and we can talk about that. That's, to me, that's really a significant issue. It's not just the fundamental of one guy getting pardoned, but he talks in front of people, and you know Sheriff Joe's going to be okay. Gave a speech that was rambling and weird. Like, I said all the things, and these liberals and the lying fake news media won't admit it, blah, blah, blah. It was a bizarre speech. But the one thing that stood out to me that I want to hear your thoughts on was the audience behind Trump, in particular, the black guy behind Trump.
Do you know the story behind that guy?
I think I do. Well, I know that he was part of a cult of some kind.
Yes. So he was a part of this weird cult down in Florida, and like super conservative religious right. Now, these guys, he didn't just come out of the woodwork for Trump. He and his like group of followers, they hated Obama. Like when Obama was elected, they thought that Obama was literally the devil. He and people in his group were indicted on murder charges,
conspiracy charges,
conspiracy. He ended up getting out of it. I think he maybe went to jail for some lesser crime. Another guy was charged with murder and I think was ultimately convicted. few other people got out of it, but I mean, it's crazy. This guy's like, and he's got all these websites with these just bizarre conspiracy kind of science fiction-y theories on who people are and their relationships to the devil and satanic cults and aliens, and Trump is the true savior. Like, it's really bizarre. So, you know, people are saying, oh, they paid this guy. I don't think they had to pay him. I think he's legitimately there because he wants to be there.
Now, what was written on his shirt was hilarious to me.
Okay. Right?
So his shirt said, Trump and Republicans are not racist, written on a white t-shirt in marker. And then he holds up a sign that said, Blacks for Trump in 2020. The t-shirt is the funny part to me, because who would ever write that?
This guy would. This guy is fucking crazy. Like, people are thinking that the Trump people went out, found this guy, wrote on a t-shirt, said, hey, wear this and here's $200. I guarantee you, they did. This guy has pictures at being at different, like, Trump events at Mar-a-Lago with his hand or with his arm around senators and congressmen, people that are surrogates and supporters of Donald Trump. Like, this guy literally or legitimately.
You didn't have to buy this guy's crazy.
They didn't have to buy.
Crazy, he had right, all the crazy.
He offered his crazy for free. He said, I'm going to let my freak flag fly. And they said, go on. You can do it right behind the president. And, I mean, it goes to a broader context of vetting. You know, we're going to talk about Sebastian Gorka. He was fired. They said he was fired. Gorka said he resigned. That's the standard.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I don't even know where we are with the Deadpool. I think everybody's dead except for Kellyanne Conway.
Fucking Kellyanne Conway and Jeff Sessions are still around. And right. Those are the two that I picked.
And so, but I just... So I don't think the guy is bought and paid for. I think the guy is offering his services for free. I think it goes to the fact that this administration doesn't care about vetting or what your past is or if you're like, they don't care. They just, as long as you stroke Trump's ego, they will allow you within. They will allow you into the inner circle. I wouldn't be surprised if this guy honestly wanted a spot in Trump's administration. I wouldn't be surprised if they'd give it to him.
New director of national security, black guy from the rally.
They wouldn't give him director position, but they made a deputy director.
And what was the name of the spiritual advisor you were telling me about? What's her name?
Paula White.
Paula White, perfect name. so he's got that chick behind him, and.
Yeah,
she's disrespectful, but she's a nutcase.
Yeah, so this Paula White woman, who is Trump's official spiritual advisor, is saying that if you resist Trump, you're resisting the hand of God. Like, that's her quote. And she, like, firmly believes that God is working through Donald Trump to fix this country, and that anyone who opposes him is an agent of the devil. So
that's not weird.
She's... You know,
yeah,
guiding
our president. Yes, I'm sorry again. That you brought that to my attention. I had never heard of this woman. That I read what you sent me. I'm like, wow. And I still can't wrap my head around the whole concept that evangelicals are on board with Trump. That is just so. If you back that train up and analyze it, the things that they claim to be for. He is so against.
Well, now, his message is so convoluted, mixed up. You know, what is his message right now other than, you know, border security and, I mean,
anti-immigrant.
Anti-immigrant. Like, that's all he's really got left.
But
and
he's really poked his own, we call it his own party. He's poked the Republican Party in the eye. A lot lately, right?
Yeah.
He's called out Mitch McConnell. He went in Arizona. He specifically, without saying the names, Jeff Flake and John McCain, attacked them, claiming they weren't patriots.
No, he said Flake's name.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Twitter.
I thought he's okay.
I mean, it was a Twitter barrage, but I mean, you know, it's hard to keep track. But I mean, he's called out, he's called out McCain. He called out Flake. There was actually what's weird is that in Alabama for Jeff Sessions' seat, there's a race going on between, oh my God, two. It's Mo.
I'm not gonna be able to help you. I saw the names, but I'm
there's a race in Alabama for Jeff Sessions' Senate seat, and you know the one guy has been supporting Trump a lot. For some reason, Trump then went and supported the other guy, who hasn't really said much in terms of supporting Trump, and everybody's just like, yeah, but this Mo, I forget his name. This Mo, whatever guy, has been supporting you and has been your surrogate and everything else. And for some reason, Trump went in the other direction. So there's just a lot of misdirection with this administration. What is their message? What have they accomplished? What are they trying to accomplish? A lot of it has been reactionary. A lot of it has been a distraction. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, what are they distracting us from? I'm one of those saying that, and I can't tell you right now. You know, someone said, oh, well, we need to focus on his campaign promises and what, you know, what he hasn't been able to do. And while, yeah, sure, if you want to go that route, but to me, that's like, that's not going to do you any good, right? Like, okay, he's got his campaign promises, but now he's in office, right? There are plenty of politicians. Barack said a lot of things on his campaigns that he didn't actually, you know, that didn't come true, that didn't accomplish. And there's a million reasons why. I get it. But we need to focus on what is in process right now. What are the type of things that we can expect coming down the pike in the next 6 months? I mean, he's talking about shutting down the government if money isn't put in the budget to put up this wall.
Right.
You know, but then there's no clear definition of what the wall is. Someone, you know, I heard on Breitbart Radio that someone was saying, well, the wall isn't necessarily a wall per se. Right? I'm like, well, this should be fun.
It's a beautiful wall. It's going to be the greatest wall ever.
Well, and what the guy was trying to say is that in some places it's not going to be actual physical wall. They're going to use drones. And then in some places it won't be a wall. It'll be a fence. And then other places it'll just be, you know, manned by, you know, border security
right.
and things like that. But it's not going to be a wall per se. It's just the wall. The word wall is a metaphor for, you know, border security, which, okay, it's fine. But then Trump comes out himself and says, nope, it's going to be a solid wall all the way across. And so what's the message? What do you want? So do you want money in the budget to build a solid wall from California to, you know, the edge of the Gulf of Mexico? Or do you want money to invest in the Homeland Security and border Patrol and ICE to build a wall where you need it, to build some sort of like electron, like what are you doing? What is the purpose of what are you guys trying to accomplish? Then with the budget, with the economy, what are you doing? What are you doing with taxes? You told us that you were going to fix the tax code. You were going to make it simpler. You were going to cut taxes and it's going to be great for the middle class. Where are you on that? We don't have a budget. We don't have a plan.
Which, by the way, I would 100% get behind simplifying the tax code and getting a bunch of the bullshit that allows corporations and individuals to duck.
Yep. Be careful.
What?
my industry relies heavily on tax.
Okay. Well,
on the current tax code. So
okay,
shut up.
But
stop it. Stop it right now. No.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, just.
I fully agree with you. I think that, you know, simplification needs to be there. I don't think it's going to get down to, you know, only three brackets, a flat
right.
tax, all this other stuff. I think that you can simplify it. I think it's going to come down to something that I believe what should happen is, you know, something in the middle, you know, of what Trump wants and what we have now. We need something a little bit better. We can't get it all the way to what Trump wants. But
doesn't really point to the corruption of Washington, though, how if whether not necessarily Democrat or Republican, all around, how there are so many loopholes and financial benefits that we don't see. I have no idea what, you know, GE is doing and giving to Senator whatever, Congressman or woman or whatever, and how they're getting these things built in. But if that bullshit got stopped, we as a general populace would be better off. We're just never going to see that.
I think
so too.
I think, but my concern is once those companies no longer get those loopholes and benefits, then they're going to want to make up that money somehow, and it it always will come back to the consumer and to the citizenry, and there's no
you're not wrong.
But, I mean, it's going to.
I mean, the amount of money they spend forcing that shit to go their way, if they didn't have to spend it because there was no game to get played, might be better.
If they could save money on lobbying, then, you know, like maybe they wouldn't need to have these crazy tax write-offs.
I look at the insurance business, right? Progressive Insurance and Geico Insurance don't seem to run out of money for advertising. If that money wasn't getting used for advertising and was getting taken out of how much they have to charge me, I'd be paying a lot less. But that's a bit of a derailment.
It's true. I mean, it is true.
It's a concept, right?
Right. But, I mean, at the same time, like, they spend that, and there's a reason why they spend that money, because they spend that money because people are willing to then spend money with them for extended periods of time.
And I someday be able to, hope to be able to say, in this segment of Whiskey Congress, brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Yeah. So again,
once I get the money, I'll stop being, I can be bought.
Of course.
All right. So changing gears a little bit. One thing that came out of this was at the Arizona speech, Trump said he was not going to pardon Sheriff Joe Arpaio yet, but Sheriff Joe is going to be okay. And 48 hours later, he pardons him. So Joe Arpaio had been convicted, was facing sentencing in October. Most of this revolved around violation of people's Fourth Amendment rights. I saw a couple things about this on the Sunday morning talk shows on Meet the Press and Face the Nation and stuff. Joe Arpaio has been a public figure and an elected sheriff in whatever county in Arizona for over 20 years, or roughly 20 years.
I think like 95.
I think 95, actually, I think that's exactly right. During that time, his department has lost $140 million in lawsuits. Now, I want to look at that objectively and say, okay, that's 20 years, so that's $7 million a year. And maybe, granted, that buys you a pretty good middle infielder in Major League Baseball, but I don't know how much of that to put on him, and I don't know what the norm is. I mean, if a police officer runs over someone's dog and that costs $1 million.
Well, I mean, the big issue with him, I mean, and just to kind of fill in the blanks for people who, like, who is this guy? Why do we care that he was pardoned? You know, Arpaio was this sheriff in a border town in Arizona who took over border security in that town. There were a number of immigrants that were coming across the border into his city. He said that they were impacting the crime rates, and that the number one problem where he was illegal immigration. So he went on, you know, a full assault of illegal immigration, you know, stopping people. You know, if you were Mexican or Latino, then they would stop you, ask you for your IDs, ask you for your papers, you know, for no other reason than you look like you might be an illegal. They arrested people, they questioned them, they held them, and it's just like, oh, well, they're illegal, they don't have rights. And so, you know, how they treated people once they were over here. Now, there's argument to be made that, listen, you know, if it was an illegal immigrant, then that person actually doesn't have rights here. And that's something that's still argued in court today. But the other issue is that he was arresting people that were legal citizens that weren't even immigrants, people that were born here. They were being arrested and detained
based,
and questioned
based on their appearance
just because they looked Mexican or they looked El Salvadorian or they looked like non-white people,
right?
You know, and his department got sued and lost frequently because they were clearly violating people's rights.
And he was convicted of a crime, right? He refused to follow a federal
law.
Well,
there was, well, because ICE, you know, our border, our immigration control, whatever, you know, Homeland Security and ICE came in and said, all right, this isn't your job. You need to focus on crime. And the city, or the county said, hey, we're spending a lot of money fighting immigration, which that's Homeland Security's job. And you're not paying attention to the fact that we have a number of different criminal cases that are like crime, other crimes aren't being investigated. And like those numbers are going up and we need you to focus on that. And he said, no, I'm focusing on illegal immigration. And then the feds came in and said, okay, we got it. It's an issue for you. So you go back and do your job with, you know, regular crime stoppage, and we'll deal with the border. And he said, nope, we're going to deal with it.
And one of the things I read about that really made me dislike this guy more was apparently he took a very lax approach toward, or his department took a very lax approach towards allegations of sexual assault on women of Hispanic backgrounds. So that's maybe not directly enabling, but it's kind of directly enabling, and it's it shows you where this guy's heart is. This guy's a scumbag.
It wasn't lax. They wouldn't investigate.
By lax, I mean not investigate.
They would not investigate. They would not investigate crimes or accusations of sexual assault against black or Latino women. Right, like if you were not a white woman, they did not investigate crimes of rape, sexual assault, any of that, domestic abuse, all that stuff got completely ignored, unless that they could make a connection that the person who did it was an illegal alien. Right, like that's like the caveat there.
That's so just revolting.
It's disgusting, and that was. That again, like that was the issue that there, you know, the local government is like, hey, we have serious crimes that are happening, and you and your guys are out on the border playing cowboys and Indians. We really need you back here, you know, investigating these crimes and preventing these crimes and having an effect on the actual local that are having an effect on the local community. He ignored it. Federal government came in, he ignored them, and then that's where he ended up being charged. And then Donald Trump has just given him a pardon.
So he was convicted, facing sentencing in October. He's now been pardoned. And that, to me, probably speaks volumes. What's that?
It'd be interesting to see if Trump goes even further and gives him some sort of role in the White House.
Well, they keep opening up, so that could happen.
Right.
After the black guy with the t-shirt gets his position, maybe Sheriff Joe can become, well, I mean, we now have a director of Gorka's.
So Sebastian Gorka was the deputy assistant to the president, Donald Trump, and Sebastian Gorka is a really interesting character. He was born he was born in Britain, in the UK. His family has ties to Hungary, and his family also has ties to a number of different extreme right nationalist groups in Europe that have very close ties, very similar beliefs as, you know, Nazi Germany, very white supremacist right wing groups. He's been photographed in some of these different, and they're Hungarian groups, so I don't want to get into the names.
Hungary's I dated a Hungarian chick in high school, and so her dad, because of her dad, I know a bit more about Hungary than a normal person would. And Hungary is a weird country because it was so brutally oppressed by the Soviets during that era that there's probably a fair bit of anything anti-Soviet sentiment there. And if that even means going Nazi, they probably weren't hard to sway in that direction.
Okay.
Sorry. Well, random thing, but
with that bit of knowledge, you know, his family and he specifically have been linked to some of these extremist groups in Europe, to the point where, you know, he's been, you know, denounced by, you know, different, you know, major government leaders in Europe. There's some questions about his actual qualifications to even be in the role that he's in. He got his PhD from some sketchy school that is not accredited.
University of Phoenix of Hungary?
Not even. That's the thing. I mean, like, that would probably be a step up than from where he got his PhD. There are multiple people who said his dissertation would not pass muster at Cleveland State, more or less.
How dare you bash Cleveland State?
It's not bashing Cleveland State, but I mean, like, if your PhD, if your dissertation wouldn't pass muster at Cleveland State, then you probably shouldn't be in the White House.
Right? Fair enough. Well, the good news is he's no longer in the White House. Right. Neither is him in the Deadpool.
Right. So,
do we get to reset the Deadpool?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's get to that. Let's get to that
close
later.
Close out that. All right.
Figure out who's left.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know.
And who's?
I was at Kelly Clarkson.
No, I don't. I'm pretty sure Kelly Clarkson would not be in the White House.
She'd be better than. All right. Anyway.
Better to look at.
Certainly. So speaking of scumbags, though, you brought to my attention Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the former chairperson of the Democratic National Committee, the person who basically believed her job was to make sure
Hillary Clinton was the Democratic nominee. Listen,
and Jim, I really don't like to do the you flat out suck thing that we're about to do with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and you know, some people will say, oh, then you guys hate women or whatever, you'll go into that thing. This woman, okay, she's the head of the DNC at the time, right? And she and her team decide that, like you said, Hillary needs to win. So they tilt it so that Bernie, all the money goes to Hillary. They completely discredit Bernie Sanders. They won't support him in any way, shape, or form. It's not open. It's not balanced. It's not fair. It's just going to be Hillary. Hillary's going to win.
Right.
And now she and the DNC were sued by, you know, Bernie Sanders people and, you know, the other side of the Democratic National Committee, who basically were going for Bernie Sanders. And court recently came back and said, well, they didn't do anything wrong. It's a private institution. It's morally corrupt, but there's not illegal about what they did. But they definitely did, you know, what they did was shady, but it wasn't illegal, essentially, is what the court came back and said. So she resigns, but at the same time, she had a person working for her named Imran Awan, right? He was her IT guy. And he also had family members, his like cousins and like brother, sister, worked for the DNC in an IT capacity. This guy working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz in her office, he ended up stealing $283,000 from the, you know, the Congressional Credit Union. Okay. Like, which is the, you know, the credit union / bank for, you know, people who work on Capitol Hill, right? So he and his wife steal basically $283,000. They did was they went to buy a house, and then they, instead of having that money go to pay for a house, they sent the money to Pakistan, right? Then once they send the money to Pakistan, they, which is highly illegal, right? Like you can't, right. Like that's one of the places you cannot send money to. So what they do is they send this money to Pakistan. The wife then hops a plane, gets herself over to Pakistan, and she takes the money out, clears it. He is packing up his stuff. He's got a suitcase with like 10 grand in it and, you know, all his stuff. And he's literally at the airport. He's at Dulles. And the feds come in, arrest him before he's able to get on a plane. Like, he was going to go, I think he was going to hit Qatar. He was going to go from Dulles to Qatar.
This is the OJ with the revolver and the mask and the 12 grand or whatever. OJ, he was splitting town. He was getting the fuck out of Dodge.
Of course. Everything has to be OJ. How you bring this back to fucking OJ?
Because I'm good.
Or
not?
you
see what I'm saying.
Right? I do see what you're saying. Like,
when you try to make this sound innocent,
he was getting out of town. And they get him right before he gets out of town. And we come to find out that his position, he's an IT guy, which he's a congressional staffer. Typically, they don't get paid a ton. They're in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. For some reason, this guy's getting paid $160,000. And
out of college, right? Like, right, almost, or first job with that.
Just, well, he's been an IT guy for the DNC for like 10 or 15 years. So, yeah, out of college because he's 37.
See, I read the article you sent me. He started out at 160.
Right. And so, which is crazy, right? Like, right out of college, he starts out at 160. Then his family members are also being paid in six figures. They were rarely there. They, like, you know, like, they didn't put in the amount of time that, you know, typically you would see. They had access to emails. They had access to top secret information, all this sort of stuff. And they've been, like, he was there for 10 to 15 years. They were, like, and we know that they were stealing computer components, hardware, software. Information was taken out. They don't know what information was taken out, but they just know certain things were removed from the DNC and sent somewhere. Things were, hardware was removed and destroyed. Like, it's crazy what these guys were doing, how long they were doing it for. Most of the family was fired in December of 2016. December of 2016, except for this Imran Awan guy, he was the only one kept on staff, and then he and his wife end up stealing, you know, a quarter of a million dollars. They steal $250,000. Wife gets away, and then he gets caught. So he's now, he's been charged, he's been indicted with a number of different things.
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not getting dragged through the mud in the public's
house. And I don't understand why not.
I didn't know about this until you brought it to my attention.
Right, which is crazy. It's crazy that it's not a bigger story.
You want to do the whole liberal media bullshit argument, fuck you, fine, whatever. This is what Breitbart and Patriot Channel and Fox News should be screaming about, not the bullshit
that
they are.
Well, I mean, they've mentioned it, but I don't understand why they're not talking about it. And how, I don't understand how
she's even... And so should CNN, so should MSNBC.
Everyone should be talking about this. And she, I don't know what I'm charging her with, but I feel like she should be charged with something. Like, she... the more I read about her, there's not a single redeeming quality about her. Like, what has she contributed? She's a congresswoman out of Florida. I can't see a single thing that she's contributed to make anything better. Everything around her stinks of fraud,
corruption,
and corruption and everything else. And she is just, I mean, like, this guy worked underneath her for 10 years.
The vibe I get from the article I read, we should put this on our websites.
Yeah, I will. Absolutely. I'll put it up. I'll tweet it out. I'll put it up and I'll tweet it out.
On whiskeycongress.com.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep, that'll be up and out tomorrow.
But it sounds like she not only allowed it, it sounds like she protected him. Like,
yeah,
she
was, she's absolutely protecting him. So now I have to wonder, why is she protecting him? Why is she protecting... I hope, honestly, I hope she's protecting him because she's fucking him. I hope that's the reason. Anything other than that is dangerous and nefarious.
You'll defend serious good dick, but...
Right. Sometimes you got to defend the dick if you're getting it, right? You know, I mean, I would...
I would rather her
be defending him because he was fucking slaying the pussy as opposed to fucking... being a terrorist, and she knew about it, right?
We just became that group.
That is a better scenario that she's defending this guy because she's fucking him. Because any other reason for her defending him is maybe treason.
It's treason either way. It's okay if there's some serious dick involved. Turns out.
Are you sure? I don't know.
So you're a lawyer. I'm not, but I'm pretty sure. But the sex was good.
There's been a whole lot of like sexual related type stuff that's been defended. Listen, Bill Clinton.
Yes.
Bill Clinton. Right,
first of all, okay? don't do this.
Bill
don't
Clinton. This. That's all right. I'm going to say. Bill Clinton, and that is it. All right. Like, I can listen.
But the sex was good, Your Honor, is not one court case yet. You're a lawyer. I'm not. Maybe I'm wrong here.
I think that I can get away with defending her by saying she was doing it for the dick. Your Honor, she is not guilty. There wasn't a condom big enough to fit. You must acquit.
Oh, no. You've used my powers against me, and you might have won this time, but I'll get you and your little dog, too. All right.
Anyway, so the whole point
that
is
went down off the
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Investigate. Let's look into this. People, please read what we post and hold her accountable. If she's as big a scumbag as I think she is, based on what I read today, she can't get away with that.
At the very least, she shouldn't be in public office anymore.
Right.
Like, so Florida, if you're listening, then you need to do something about this, right? She's your congresswoman. So, you know, 2018, you need to get this figured out.
2018, I want to see Congress get flipped dramatically. And based on what I know now, I want her to be part of that flip. Even if she is flipped out. Even if she is part of the party I generally vote with, this comes
off
real
bad.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a part of the problem.
Exactly. And
you know,
so
she's,
thanks for bringing that to my attention. Holy fuck.
Well, it's been going on now for a couple weeks, and the fact that I just couldn't believe that it hasn't caught any sort of fire. I mean, and just
you brought it to my attention, and I had no idea what you're talking about.
And just
about.
Her in general. I mean, like she was being sued for fraud. She's got a guy working underneath her who's stealing money, all this other stuff, and it's just like, oh well, it's not her fault. I mean, like, everything around her is going to hell in a handbasket, and no one's looking at her and saying, so what else are you into? I don't know, man.
And by the way, Pakistan dangerous country, right?
Very dangerous country, right? I mean to be sending money to Pakistan, that's not a small amount. You know, $280,000. What could that be funding?
Where was Osama bin Laden getting sanctuary when we killed him?
I believe it was Pakistan.
It was Pakistan. So, I mean, again, you know, they were telling us stay away from our borders, nothing to see here. And I gave Obama a ton of credit for not following that. And we sent SEAL Team 6 in. They took out Osama bin Laden, something that I'm happy happened. And whether the Pakistani government knew he was in there or not, let's not be naive.
Can we talk about the amazing part that going in, we everyone knew that we went in and killed Osama bin Laden in Pakistan behind the enemy lines. They made a fucking movie about it, and somehow it didn't start a fucking war.
It didn't start a war because they couldn't go to war with us. But they deceived us for how long?
They couldn't.
Pakistan's going to go to war with the United States.
Logistically, they couldn't, but they had cause.
Oh, cause, certainly.
We crossed over into their borders. We killed people. They absolutely could have. Logistically, it wasn't good for them.
One of my favorite Bill Maher moments, and I know you and I disagree on Bill Maher, but
I don't think we do. It's just for some reason you keep fucking watching his show.
Okay. In the McCain versus Obama election, Obama was asked, would you go into Pakistan? And McCain said he wouldn't. Obama said he would. And McCain called Obama naive. And when we took out bin Laden, Bill Maher said, nah, who's being naive, Kay? Which is a reference to The Godfather. And I digress. But anyway, no, it was true. Obama said he would not shy away from doing that. Yeah. He didn't. Osama bin Laden's dead. I'm glad he's dead. And he was getting sanctuary in Pakistan for a long fucking time.
Agreed.
And now apparently Debbie Wasserman Schultz is enabling someone to send money to Pakistan. Who knows who and why, but it does make me very uncomfortable. I have relatively little party loyalty. I mean, you have none, and I have almost none. I don't
even know what you're clinging on to.
I have no blind loyalty. If I see a Democrat being a scumbag, I'll call him out. I think this is what we're seeing out of Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
I disagree. I know you have blind loyalty to a couple things.
But are you gonna call me out now, or are we gonna play nice?
No, we're gonna play nice.
We're gonna play nice. We'll drink our Tullamore and our Hay Burner from Big Ditch Brewing.
It's actually really good. So
it is.
Kudos to them.
And yeah, good folks. I've been to their brewery. Like I said, former coworkers of mine, friends of mine. So well done, folks. I got to see their operation spring up from nothing into something. That was kind of cool. Like I said, Buffalo-based company. I'd love to talk Buffalo sports, but you want to take a few minutes to talk Cleveland sports? Because there's been some pretty interesting stuff in the last couple of days.
Yeah, you know what? Why don't we do this? Let's take a couple... Let's go ahead and wrap this show up. And come back. We'll talk a little bit of sports. We'll find some other bizarre stuff to talk about, and we'll do a second show. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up.
Sounds good.
Glad a couple weeks in a row we've been able to get together.
Face to face.
You helped me out by coming to my place. Had some medical stuff going on. Still.
I'm not bringing this up.
Still dealing with some medical things.
Email Steve at whiskeycongress.com if you want more information.
Yeah, you're not getting any more information. But hopefully,
you're all good. Yeah, I know.
For the most part, I can get back to the gym this week, maybe. But anyway,
all right, we'll wrap it up. Thank you for listening to us at whiskeycongress. At whiskeycongress on all social medias. We are whiskeycongress.com. We're available on iTunes, on Stitcher. Please give us a rating. Please reach out to us and spread the word. So, thanks, man. Good show. Later.